NBC Mudder News on the Hour, brought to you by Plymouth, where the win you over beat goes on. Here's Charles Murphy.
Both the Soviet Union and the United States were reported willing today to let the United Nations Security Council invite North and South Korea to the debate on the Pueblo incident. One council diplomat said neither the U.S. nor the Soviet Union has the inclination to raise the question of Korean participation now, but that neither would be opposed to it. One Western delegate said there was a possibility that invitations could be sent out to the two Korean governments, neither of which is a U.N. member. North Korea's vice president says his country is bent on severely punishing the crew of the Pueblo and will repel any American attacks against his country. The remarks were made by Vice President Kang in Damascus, Syria, where he stopped on a trip from Moscow to Iraq. Communist China gave new support to North Korea today. It called the Pueblo incident American blackmail against Korea. In Washington, the Defense Department confirmed reports it was strengthening American air power in the Far East as a precautionary move in the new crisis. In Seoul, South Korea, Major General Frank Eisner, the American commander in charge of controlling the armistice line, said he expects the Pueblo seizure will trigger more hit-and-run assaults by the North Koreans along the line. More news after this from Plymouth.
Petula Clark for your Plymouth dealer's second annual Win You Over sale. Back again, and even better. Back with big savings on 11 new specially equipped Plymouth. Featuring an extra special Fury two-door fast tap with vinyl covered roof, fender skirts, white walls, deluxe wheel covers, and lots more. All at specially reduced prices. And the beat goes on.
See your Plymouth dealer now during the second annual Win You Over sale. He's featuring special savings on 11 specially equipped Plymouths. Once again, Charles Murphy.
Havana Radio says 11 prominent communist officials have been purged, along with dozens of lower-ranking officials. The broadcast said those purged had opposed Fidel Castro's guerrilla warfare program in Latin America. They were also accused of thinking like the American CIA. The U.S. command says Marines killed 151 North Vietnamese soldiers in a battle near the Marine artillery base at Camp Carroll. Guns at Camp Carroll support the Marine base at Quezon, which has been expecting an attack at any time from at least two North Vietnamese divisions. The Marines lost 19 men killed and 90 wounded in the fight near Camp Carroll. It was one of several violations of the ceasefire declared by the Viet Cong. Here's a report on that from NBC News correspondent Howard Tuckner in Saigon.
The self-declared seven-day Viet Cong truce is not being respected by the Allies, who had said they wouldn't respect it, or by the Viet Cong, who had said they would. The Viet Cong went into the second day of its truce in an all-out fight with units of the U.S. AmeriCal Division south of Da Nang. The Americans were on a search mission when they were hit with heavy automatic weapons by a Viet Cong force. U.S. spokesmen say 21 enemy were killed in the two-hour fight, with one U.S. soldier killed and five wounded. The 36-hour self-declared allied truce for the Lunar New Year is scheduled to begin 6 p.m. Monday night, Saigon time. Howard Tuckner, NBC News, Saigon.
North Vietnam today released the names of three American airmen it says are being set free as a humanitarian gesture in observance of the Lunar New Year. It did not say how or when the men would be released. The three were identified as Captain John Black of Tennessee, Major Norris Overly of West Virginia, and Ensign David Matheny of Indiana. No hometowns were given. The Pentagon would not disclose hometowns either, saying the men were still listed as prisoners of war. Matheny had been listed as missing by the Pentagon until 4 days ago. Jack Murphy, known to Florida police as Murph the Surf, has been arrested after a gunfight on the grounds of a Miami Beach mansion. Police said Murphy crashed through a glass door to get out of the house after police broke up a robbery. Murphy and three other men were charged with robbery and with assault on an officer. Murphy, a 32-year-old beach boy, served a 2-year prison term for stealing the Star of India Sapphire and other jewels from a New York museum in 1964. Again, the hour's top story, U.S. and Soviet Union reported willing to invite the two Koreas to U.N. debate, though neither has made such a move yet. Charles Murphy, NBC News, Washington.
Listen again on the hour for NBC Monitor News.
Metropolitan Area News next on the Conversation Station, WNBC New York. It's 37 degrees in New York City, and this is Fred Collins with the latest WNBC News. Mayor Lindsay has named Dr. Merrill Eisenbud, the former director of the Health and Safety Laboratory of the Atomic Energy Commission, to head the city's Environmental Protection Administration. The administration is one of the super agencies being set up by Lindsay in his reorganization of the city government. The mayor also named a sanitation commissioner, James Marin, a former Navy engineer. Marin succeeds Samuel Keering, who resigned last November. The strike at Manhattan and Bronx parking garages has already resulted in lines of cars forming outside parking lots, which are not affected by the walkout. The situation is expected to be worse tomorrow, and officials are asking motorists to use public transportation for commuting, or if they have to drive, to leave their cars outside Manhattan. The license department is planning to send its full force of inspectors out tomorrow to check on price gouging at parking lots. Alternate side street parking regulations and the 3-hour parking limit for trucks have been suspended for the duration of the strike. We'll have a special WNBC News report at 5:30. At Paterson, New Jersey, efforts are being made to end a driver strike that has shut down a bus line that carries 20,000 commuters to New York City on an average weekday. The walkout at the Intercity Transportation Company results from a dispute over work rules. Rent Administrator Frederick Berman has announced that rent controls will be lifted on most apartments that rent for $250 or more a month. Apartments occupied by four or more related people or by single parents with two children will be exempted as long as the family remains there. The new decontrol goes into effect tomorrow for vacant apartments.
Don't move, just leave your dollar. Here's Monitor. Lean back and stay a while now. Here's Monitor.
Kurt Gowdy, your host. America's number one cook is, well, we'd say Julia Child. And I'm sure a lot of people would agree. Mrs. Child says that if she can cook, anyone can cook. She couldn't boil water until she was past 30. We have an interview with the lady and her husband coming up from their winter retreat in France in about 3 minutes.
Somewhere a child still belongs to you, back where a friend is singing songs to you, did you know? You know your way now in your memory, back in the playground of what used to be, can I go? If you were hiding when I came along, give me the chance to try and find you. Take me along when you're ready to go. Give me your mind and I'll take you back to the time when we talked in nursery rhyme, whenever people wouldn't go. I know.
one of the 101 perfect strangers who's taste tested a new 101. The filter cigarette 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds. Ma'am, what do you think?
Oh, what do I know about cigarettes? I'm a lumberjack.
Well, you must have some reaction.
I do. I think that silly millimeter is silly.
How about the taste?
That's not silly. I'd like them even if they weren't 1 millimeter longer.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
The 101. It tastes one better.
Timber.
Julia Child's cookery program on television has made her a national celebrity and has put a lot of people in the kitchen who never knew escargot from vichyssoise. Mrs. Child is currently living on the French Riviera. She's working on her second cookbook, and Monitor reporter John Cannon visited her in the kitchen, which is really a master chef's workshop.
Julia, one goes around and talks to the great restaurateurs in Paris and in the countryside of Paris, and generally they say that a woman is never a great cook, that it's always a man who's a great chef. Now, how would you explain that?
I can't think of any great women chefs. They all are men. For one thing, the life of a professional chef is a very tough life, and usually women don't have the strength for it. There are, of course, some extremely good women chefs in some of the small restaurants, but you've got to be a big, tough person, and that means a man, usually.
Let's go down to the very basics. What do you start out with? You know, like a young girl marries and she wants to cook well. Now, what are a few very basic rules for getting off on the right foot?
Well, I think if it's possible, if she could find any good instruction, it is very useful to have a few cooking lessons first just to get herself started off. Otherwise, a good book and follow it. And not try to be too fancy at first. You have to start out with the basic things. You've got to have breakfast first. In other words, how to fry an egg, how to make good coffee. Then you have to have meat. I'd certainly start out with something very simple and vegetables, but I think it's a great mistake to get too terribly complicated until you're used to the kitchen. It doesn't take very long if you carefully pay attention to what you're doing.
I think that her standards are very high for anybody, and I don't think that the reason she cooks well here because she's cooking for me, it's because she just loves cooking. People often say, how is it that you, who live in a world of food, can keep your slim figures? And the answer is very easy, but the doing of it is very difficult. The answer is, don't eat very much. That's all. You just have to be watchful of every mouthful of anything that you put into your mouth, and just go slow and take it easy. That's the answer.
Julia, would you answer that too? How many good meals can one have, or, you know, fairly big meals can one have in 1 week, for instance?
Well, I think one should weigh oneself every morning, and then you can judge. If you've kept your level, you can say, well, I can eat quite well today. But I think the idea is mini meals, one helping and not too much of it. Then you can always eat very well and not get fat.
That's a very good thought to leave on, and we will do that. And we want to thank you very much, Julia Child and Paul Child. And this is John Cannon for Monitor from Provence.
Mrs. Child didn't mention her grand experiment, which after 5 months of work is no longer an experiment. She's managed to make French bread out of bleached American flour. And she says that her French loaves made from ingredients that are sold in every American supermarket are better than the bread being baked by many bakers in France. Voila. And she'll reveal her secret recipe in her next book, Mel Allen. Weight Watchers all, think thin, and stay on the Monitor Beacon.
Hi, this is Andy Devine, and I want to talk to you about kids. Partly because I like kids, but mostly because so many fatherless boys need the help that only you can give them. A growing boy needs a man to look up to and show him the way when the going gets rough. And Big Brothers is the organization that does something about the problems every fatherless boy is up against. The record proves that their policy of one man, one boy really works. They're not asking for your money. Believe me, you'll find that being a Big Brother can be one of the most rewarding experiences of your life. Because no man ever stands so straight as when he stoops to help a boy. Find out what you can do. Call your local Big Brothers office a write to Big Brothers of America, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19103. Thanks.
WNBC News will present a comprehensive special report on a possible transportation crisis this afternoon in 15 minutes.
We mentioned earlier, in reference to Monitor's series this weekend on graft in the big cities, that the New York Police Department just the other day charged 10 policemen with taking payoffs from business concerns. That story broke in the wake of an even bigger scandal, which is described in this report from Gabe Pressman, NBC News.
New York City has been hit with one of its greatest scandals in modern times. A close friend and confidant of Mayor John Lindsay has been indicted on charges of taking a bribe and a kickback in construction contracts for city work. The man is 36-year-old James Marcus, Lindsay's water commissioner and chief troubleshooter until he got into trouble himself. Marcus, accused of taking a $16,000 kickback on a reservoir contract and taking a $10,000 bribe. He was indicted with Anthony Tony Ducks Corallo, a reputed mafia leader. The scandal was a deep personal shock to John Lindsay, New York's first Republican mayor in 20 years. Lindsay won an upset victory 2 years ago on a platform pledging to rid New York of decades of Democratic machine corruption and misrule. Marcus was a trusted friend. His indictment tarnished Lindsay's political image, locally and nationally. In 1965, Lindsay seemed to be a white knight, doing battle with municipal forces of evil. Now, New York's handsome 46-year-old mayor has worry lines etched in his face and obviously has discovered that bossing a civil service bureaucracy of 300,000 employees has built-in risks. The irony is a man who pledged to eradicate municipal corruption has become one of its victims. One wonders whether corruption is inevitable in any big city government. But there's another aspect. Lindsay and his reformers, with no previous experience in handling municipal power, are at a disadvantage. It's been said the old Democratic city bosses, with their philosophy of you give a little and take a little, had a better survival instinct. Many years ago, a great New York Democratic boss, who was ousted by reformers but returned to power 3 years later, said, "I told you that when the reformers got into office, they'd stand up so straight, they'd fall over backwards." In New York today, reformer John Lindsay, fighting for political survival amidst scandal, faces his greatest test. He must prove that reformers can rule effectively and honestly. Gay Pressman, NBC News, New York.
Our next regional report in Monitor's series in Graft in the Big Cities will come from New Orleans.
Play now, pay later. The RCA way.
From RCA, number one in home entertainment, come number one for the money specials. Special introductions of brand new color TV with big 23-inch diagonal screen. Number one for the money specials. Brand new stereo consoles. Big stereo sound in beautiful cabinet styles. Also, brand new black and white TV. Portable stereo and radios. So play now, pay later. The RCA way.
Play now, pay later. The RCA way.
Get a number one for the money special at participating RCA dealers now.
The Jones Boy has a brand new release. It's next, and here's Jack.
If you ever leave me, don't worry at all. If you ever leave me, just smile when I fall. The tears if you ever leave me, I'll hide all my fears. And even though I try and still pretend that I don't need your warmth, don't need your touch, don't want your love so very much, I know if you ever leave me, I need your warmth, I need your touch, I want your love so very much, if you ever leave me.
Moment, Mel Allen reports on Today in Sports. Monitor Sports is brought to you by your Lincoln Mercury dealer, home of better idea cars from the makers of Lincoln Continental.
In just 1 year, more people have switched to Mercury Cougar than any other car in its class. The Big Cat is a roaring success. Who else in its class has a flashing tail that points the direction you're turning? And it's standard. Headlamps that hide by day, shine by night, standard. A big new V8 growl, standard. Bucket seats, floor shift, full-width rear seat, all standard. In fact, Cougar's got more equipment that's standard than any other luxury sports car in its class. The only one built with the fine car touch. Inspired by Lincoln Continental. Now, there are twice as many Cougars to choose from. Mercury's got it. The Big Cat, a roaring success. Get it today at your Mercury dealers.
At the Monitor Sports Desk now, Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Kurt. Hello there, everybody. The doors of baseball's Hall of Fame swung open again today to admit two more players elected unanimously by the Committee on Veterans. They were numbers 109 and 110, and their names, Leon Goose Goslin and the late Hazen Kai Kai Kyler. You knew Kyler, didn't you?
Didn't know him well, but I knew the other man, Mel.
Last week, if you'll recall, Ducky Medwick was enshrined in the regular balloting of the Baseball Writers Association. Goslin, who played for Washington, Detroit, and the St. Louis Browns during an 18-year career that ended in 1938, had a .316 lifetime average. His best season was in 1928 when he batted .379. Kyler also had an 18-year major league career ending in 1938. He played with Pittsburgh, Brooklyn, Cincinnati, and the Chicago Cubs, and had a lifetime average of .321 with a high of .360 in 1929. They both were outfielders. Looking at basketball, in the National Basketball Association, Boston beat Philadelphia 115 to 103. Sam Jones and Bailey Howell each scored 29 points for the Celtics. New York took San Francisco 133 to 130. Rudy LaRusso of the Losers led all the scorers with 31 points. And in college basketball, LaSalle beat Duquesne 80 to 79. A hockey result in the National Hockey League, Minnesota 2, Detroit 1. The World University Winter Games ended in Innsbruck, Austria today with the United States winning gold and bronze medals in the men's slalom. Scoring were 20-year-old Scott Piles of Western State College and 27-year-old Loris Werner of Steamboat Springs, Colorado. The United States finished second in 26-nation competition with 4 gold medals, 3 silver, and 3 bronze. Russia was first with 8-5 and 5. The Winter Olympics don't open in France until February 6th, but that hasn't prevented an Olympic dispute from arising and being settled. Until today, only the French bobsled team is permitted on the course. Other countries were scheduled to begin practice on February 3rd, but visiting teams threaten to walk out of the games, and the French bowed to the pressure. The course will be open to all comers beginning tomorrow. At Megève, France, America's Billy Kidd and Jimmy Huga placed 1-2 in the slalom behind France's Alain Pons, which buoyed United States Olympic hopes. Kidd and Huga won medals in the 1964 Olympics. The best American finisher in the women's slalom was Kiki Cutter, who took third. A pro football trade, the Pittsburgh Steelers sent defensive end John Baker to the Detroit Lions in exchange for linebacker Wally Hilgenberg. And there's a world flyweight title bout on tap in Mexico City tonight. Thailand's Choi Chinoy defends against Mexico's Efren Torres. Chinoy is favored. That's the late sports news, Kurt. Mel Allen here, friends, and now a word about Autolite.
Le Mans, France, June 1967. You're listening to the car that won, the Ford Mark IV, a $100,000 car with $1 spark plugs. They're Autolite plugs, the same kind you buy. How come $1 plugs in a $100,000 car? Because there are no better plugs, not at any price. Get Autolite spark plugs for your car, whatever kind you drive.
Mal Allen will have more late sport news and results for you a little bit later on Monitor. Sunny by Stan Kenton. A short break here now on NBC stations along the line, one of which is KFAM in St. Cloud, Minnesota. This is Kurt Gowdy.
Italian humor comes to Monitor in a visit with comedian Pat Cooper tonight on the NBC radio network.
Finally, I am here, India. High in the mountains of Kashmir, I have journeyed across the world to find wise man Heshi Yogi and the secret of happiness.
My son, for what do you search?
Tell me, wise Heshi, the secret of happiness.
Love, peace, flowers, Wetsons.
You mean like Wetson's hamburger restaurant?
Oh yes, Wetson's, where the sun always shines.
Wetson's? Where they serve those great hamburgers, chicken, fish, french fries, and shakes?
After all, you can't eat flowers. Wetson's is a taste of happiness on a bun.
And there's a Wetson's hamburger restaurant near you.
Tomorrow, Bill Mazur invites you to Radio Premiere Week on WNBC New York. At 5:31, here is a special report from WNBC News. Here is Jim Iyer.
Hope for an early settlement of a strike by parking garage workers is very dim this evening. This means that when motorists who work in Manhattan and the Bronx drive to their jobs tomorrow morning, there will be 200,000 fewer parking places available. The union, 3,500 garage workers, represented by Teamsters Workers Union Local 272, went out on strike at midnight last night against 650 garages in Manhattan and the Bronx. They did so after rejecting a tentative settlement made earlier between their union leaders and garage owners. On top of the crisis that appears certain to develop tomorrow because of the strike of garagemen, the intercity bus company of Paterson, New Jersey, was hit by a wildcat strike today. 12,000 Sunday commuters to and from New York City were affected. Up to 30,000 commuters will be affected on 11 runs between the Paterson area and New York City tomorrow, unless there is a settlement there. At last word, the possibilities of a settlement between the drivers, members of Local 69 of the Brotherhood of Trainmen, and the company seemed extremely remote, according to a source in the company. There is one hope. There is an unconfirmed report that the company, which is in receivership, is seeking a court order to get the men back to work. There is no indication as to whether they will obey it or not, or if it can be granted by tomorrow's rush hour. Recapping, 30,000 commuters from the Paterson area to New York City apparently will not be able to use the intercity lines tomorrow. The company has been hit by a wildcat strike. And with 650 garages unavailable for 200,000 cars, there's only one important bit of advice for motorists to keep in mind tomorrow. And that is, unless you find it absolutely necessary, to bring your car into Manhattan or the Bronx tomorrow, don't. This is Jim Iyer, WNBC News.
This has been a special report from WNBC News. We now rejoin Monitor in progress.
Stephen Schaeffler, 25 years old, of Springfield, New Jersey, is an unusual American in Vietnam. He's unusual because after serving as a soldier over there, he returned to study at a Vietnamese university and recently became a novice Buddhist monk. He talked in Saigon with Jack Russell, NBC News.
After spending 2 years as a soldier in Vietnam, why did you return to this country?
I came back to this country, actually, because I had an opportunity to study here. I received a scholarship from the University of Michigan to study at Bonhart University, which is the Buddhist university here. I liked Vietnam, I had friends here, and I wanted to do further study in Vietnam.
You recently became a novice Buddhist monk. What made you reach that decision?
Well, I'd studied at Bonhart University for 2 years. And though I didn't really study a lot of Buddhism, for example, I didn't study enough to have a master's or PhD in Buddhism, I became fairly interested. And one thing became very, very clear, that if you want to study Buddhism, actually, and study it in a way that'll be most useful, you must practice Buddhism. Buddhism is not a religion to be studied as maybe Catholicism or Judaism might be, but it's a religion to be practiced more than anything else. In fact, it might not even be called a religion, especially the Theravada sect. The best way to practice it is to practice it as a monk, at least for some period of time in your life. Most Hinayana countries, such as Cambodia, Thailand, Burma, the young men become monks for 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years. And if they want to continue, they continue. And if they want to go back to the outside life, then they do.
What is the ritual of the Buddhist monk in Vietnam or in your sect?
When I became a novice monk, I had to pledge myself to my instructor. I had to pledge what they sometimes call seek refuge in the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, that is the teaching, and the Sangha, that is the order of monks. Now, as a novice monk, there are 105 rules that I must follow, from the way I eat, the way I dress, the way I walk. Even when I go to the bathroom, I must follow some rules.
Part of the ritual also, the shaving of the head.
Oh, yes. There are a few reasons for shaving the head. One is the fact that you are different from people. You have entered the order. And One of the easiest ways to become different, for people to know you're different, is to have a shaved head. Two, one of the parts of the body that is a dirty part of the body, as most parts of the body are, is your hair. You might not think so. Actually, look at your hair. You comb it every day and you think it's very nice. But if you pulled a few hairs out, you wouldn't actually want to put it in your food and eat it. And third of all, when you have hair, you're constantly worrying about combing it, making it good looking.
How about the ordinary people in Vietnam? How do they react to you as a Buddhist monk?
The Buddhists, I guess, like it pretty much. I haven't been out of the pagoda too much to tell. The kids naturally tease me, but they tease a lot of the Buddhist monks. But when I go into a family, for example, that's a Buddhist family, especially a strong Buddhist family, they never say, "There's the American monk." Never. Sometimes the little kids will say it, or some people who aren't really Buddhists will say it, but the Buddhists will never say it. They'll address me by my name and only my name. I'm treated like all other monks, which is actually treated better than all Vietnamese. Monks are treated much better than Vietnamese in a Buddhist family. You could say right now I'm the top of the social scale in a Vietnamese Buddhist atmosphere, so to speak.
That was Stephen Schlafer, an American who became a Buddhist monk in Vietnam. Jack Russell, NBC News, reporting for Monitor from Saigon. As noted before, Mr. Schlafer was in service in Vietnam, returned to this country, and subsequently went back there to study before becoming a novice Buddhist monk. Unusual young man from Springfield, New Jersey.
Here's one of 101 perfect strangers who's taste tested a new 101. The filter cigarette 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds. Ma'am, what do you think?
Oh, well, I think everybody should love one another.
I mean, what do you think of 101 cigarettes?
Oh, I think that silly millimeter is silly.
How about the taste?
Well, that's not silly. I'd like it even if it wasn't 1 millimeter longer.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
The 101. It tastes one better.
You love them.
This song goes way back. The latest release by Frankie Lane.
A rose must remain with the sun and the rain, or its lovely promise won't come true. To each his own, to each his own, and my own. If the words just don't belong, and a dream must be a dream for two, no good alone to each is all, for me there's you. If a flame is to grow, there must be a glow to open each door.
Thank you.
Winter Olympics. About 2.5 hours from now, I'll be leaving for Kennedy, flying to Grenoble, France. And I'll have a chance to see my friend again, Jim Simpson, who'll preview it right here in about 5 minutes. So stay on the Monitor Beacon.
Hello, this is Jim Gerhardt. I'm the new man here at WNBC, and this is what I'll be doing.
Hello?
Oh, is this a phone booth?
Yes.
What is the location there, please?
Well, it's right near the Broad Street subway.
I think this is the one I wanted. Is there a suit of clothes in there by any chance?
A suit of clothes where?
In the booth.
In the booth?
Uh-huh.
No.
There's no clothing at all in there? I left some clothes, in a booth. My name is Clark Kent.
Uh-huh.
And, I was here trying to rescue a girl. You wouldn't know. Her name was Lois Lane. And I changed clothes in a phone booth. And then when I went out, you know, with my cape and my blue suit, to look for Miss Lane, I forgot what booth I left it in.
Well, this is the,
So please join me, Jim Gerhardt, weekdays from 2 to 4, when WNBC Radio premieres the week of January 29th. The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York.
12 minutes before the hour, and we take a moment to remind you that this evening's guests on Meet the Press on NBC Radio will be Dr. Benjamin Spock and the Reverend William Sloan Coffin, Jr., both of whom were recently indicted by a federal grand jury on charges of conspiring to encourage violations of the draft laws. Hear Meet the Press later on most of these NBC stations. Monitor music now by Camerata and the Mike Somm Singers. Moment, Jim Simpson reports on the Winter Olympics. Monitor Sports is brought to you by State Farm Fire and Casualty, the world's largest homeowners insurance company.
Hello, anybody. Henry Morgan here with a special message. Ladybug, ladybug, fly away home. Your house is on fire. Your children are next door watching it on TV. Aren't you glad that you have a low-cost homeowners policy from State Farm Fire and Casualty Company? And that with that policy comes a friendly State Farm agent who's probably on his way to pitch in on the fast, efficient claim service that's made State Farm number one in homeowners insurance. Henry Morgan to Ladybug, over and out. Henry Morgan to all you other homeowners. Now that I've told you about the State Farm homeowners policy, the one with rates lower than most, maybe one of you could tell me where a guy who talks to ladybugs can get some much-needed help?
For your home and your car and your life. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
This is Jim Simpson speaking for Monitor Sports. Nearly everyone likes to receive mail from overseas. It gives the day a sense of excitement, the world a feeling of being just a bit smaller. And so when a package came in last week's mail from Grenoble, France, I attacked the wrapping to get to the book inside. The book turned out to be a guide for reporters who will be covering the 1968 Winter Olympic Games, which began on February the 6th in Grenoble, France. It warned those who are going to Grenoble to be prepared to declare their equipment, such as typewriters, cameras, microphones, tape machines, or whatever, to the customs officials at their point of entry. It explained how to apply for a room in the brand new press center, which has just been rushed to completion in the south of the Olympic city, Grenoble. It tells how best to get to Grenoble, and even includes a list of airline, train, and bus schedules for your convenience. It tells of the procedure to obtain credentials, and it also lists the method of transportation for reporters and commentators from the press center to the different venues where the games will be held. This is important because private travel will be almost abandoned on select roads that lead to the competitions, and so shuttle buses and what the brochure terms saloon cars will be available to ferry the journalists to their duties. But the brochure also says these shuttle buses and saloon cars will be leaving at the rate of about 1 a minute, which indicates, first, there will be a gob of reporters covering the Winter Olympics, and second, it's a good thing private cars won't be allowed. The roads will be clogged anyway. The Guide for Olympic Reporters also declares that 400 cigarettes, 50 cigars, and 500 grams of tobacco can be brought into France. But if a reporter calls Corsica, Algeria, Tunisia, or Morocco home, sorry, he can only bring in 200 cigarettes, 50 cigars, and 400 grams of tobacco. It's like carrying coals to Newcastle, but 3 bottles of wine can be brought into France, plus 1 bottle of aperitif. And remembering the differences of economic opinion between the United States and France, it's humorous to note that a reporter can bring in any amount of French francs, foreign currency, checks, or bills of exchange that he would like. The French are the French, and as such, they love their food, which they consider excellent and of which they are proud. And so our Olympic manual tells us that the press center menus will daily feature foods from one of the many provinces of France. And then it goes on to list a typical menu, poulard, a brioche, crepes croissant, a choice of cheese, and of course, a quarter of a liter of Burgundy. The cost of this high style of repertory living is only $11 a day for a room plus breakfast and one other meal. And consider that reporters are on expense accounts. They may work hard covering the Olympic Games, which fan out from Grenoble to distances of nearly 40 miles, but they will certainly eat well, and apparently they will drink well, too. In the midst of all of this talk of wine and crepes croissant, may I remind you that NBC Radio, beginning next weekend, will have complete and daily coverage of the 1968 Winter Olympic Games. This is Jim. Can't wait to get to Grenoble. Simpson, reporting for Monitor Sports.
And now a word about 101.
Here's one of the 101 perfect strangers who's taste-tested a new 101. The filter cigarette, a silly millimeter longer than the 100.
Make it fast. Time is money.
You're an accountant.
No, a clockmaker. And I think you're kidding about that extra millimeter in case you're interested.
How about the taste?
I think you're serious about that. I don't blame you. It does taste one better.
A silly millimeter longer. 101. A silly millimeter longer. 101.
The 101. It tastes one better.
I don't need to get wound up about it.
Once again, a reminder that for comprehensive coverage of the Winter Olympics, beginning next Saturday.
Stay right here on NBC.
Thank you.
from the new movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, by Hugo Montenegro. Nice being with you while Henry Morgan's away. This is Kurt Gowdy, and news is next.
So we must take a station break. Don't turn your set off, don't you make a mistake. Don't leave us behind, there's still lots more time. Good morning, sir.
This is Sterling Yates, your old proprietor, inviting you to swap a few moments of your time for mine on Show and Sell. WNBC's new trade center, where one man's white elephant could be another's golden opportunity. The Sterling Yates Show and Sell, premiering Monday morning, January 29th at 10 on WNBC. Please join me.
January 29th, premiere week on WNBC.
Three men and a woman, committed to nothing, committing everything. Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor, Alec Guinness, Peter Ustinov. The comedians. Burton, Taylor, the comedians. Suggested for mature audiences.
The Comedians is now showing at Showcase Theaters. Check newspapers for listing. The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York.